Oh, she's lucky. So long. Okay. I have to realize this. Does someone have some tissue? One tissue? Somebody has some? Yeah. Okay. Toilet paper is fine. Also. As long as it absorbs. Yes. Yes, okay. Thank you. So to the question, did Buddha forbid intense practice, why not to do regular daily meditation instead of intense practice? We do intense practice because we don't do regular daily meditation. If we did regular daily meditation, probably we didn't need, intense practice. And also, Buddha forbid self-mortification, not intense practice. This is not an extreme. Buddha taught the extreme of self-mortification and indulgence. Yeah? That's what Buddha forgave. Yeah? Self-mortification, non-intense practice. At the time of Buddha, the practice was unthinkable. It was extremely intense. The practice is intense. It's different, self-mortification. Yeah? Buddha did not forbid intense practice. He promoted, encouraged. intense practice. And also, with daily practice, without a retreat, intense retreat, there's no way we can develop a real habit, habitual tendency. It's impossible, difficult. Nothing is impossible. It's difficult. That's why intense practice, retreat. And normally, the person who wrote the question have done the 10 days retreat is different. This is intense, like in the 10 days in a residential retreat. In the residential retreat, the breaks are, a bit longer. Yeah, is balanced with the walking meditation. non-residential retreat like this, it has to be intense. Yeah, from 9 to 5, 9 to 6. So it tends to be intense. Otherwise, we cannot develop this habit. And also, I find this type of retreat good, very good, because unlike the long residential retreat, the mind, the person is one place, And so I've been thinking about home and different things. Yeah, the person knows. You go back home. You don't start at 5 o'clock, 6, at 4 o'clock or 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock. Where is it? So intense. Easy. So by 6, 5, 6, it's over. You go home, relax. It's perfect. So therefore, from 9 to 6, focus, because then you are free. Tonight I will be free. This evening I will be free. Therefore, you really put an effort into completed. You take advantage of these 7-8 hours. It's perfect. Normally a bit timid, throughout the long retreat, is in a foreign place, not at home. It takes time to adjust. But here, you go back home, and you know it. So therefore, those hours, from 9 to 6, you can really dedicate completely. And I think will be it can be very profitable because it is intense. At the same time, the mind knows, afterwards I can relax. Today I can relax. Instead, in the residential retreat, it's in 10 days, you know? After 10 days I can relax. So I find that's really good. So the voice should take, you know, advantage of this opportunity or practice intensely, and then also can relax. Yeah. So then today, what we mentioned today is most of our fear, worries, you know, unhappiness, are with regard to things, places that we never go, people we never meet, most of the time, yeah, situation we never face, except in our mind. Yeah. If in our deathbed, at age of 90, 100, you know, we look back, you know, our life, how many times we got worried and afraid, how many times really that things happen, you know, how many times the reason for being worried and afraid really happened in our lives when you look back. You know, we find out that 80-90% of the time that we become afraid, worried, and unhappy, most of the time with regard to things that we actually don't face. As I say, people we actually don't meet, places we actually don't go, yeah, situation we actually don't face, people don't see. Yeah. We can see this in the retreat, you know, when you, the mind makes stories. The mind makes stories and create the so-called, you know, the hell, you know, it's the mind that creates the hell. So, this is what in Buddhism called the hope, you know, fear, free from hope and fears. Yeah, there's hope and fears. Not the hope, you know, like the hope that the Dalai Lama have to see Tibet free. That is a genuine, you know, positive, natural hope. We're talking about that. You know, in Buddhism, we use this, you know, in the Dharma, this word of hope, free from hope. But here, there's a particular meaning. I think it's quite striking, this. Recently, I hope I remember the actual words. Recently, there was an interview in Australia of Kerry O'Brien, ABC, interviewed, what's the name? Clive James. Clive James? You know Clive James? You know, he's English really now, more than Australia. Clive James, which got no, I think he's emphysema, is quite ill, interviewed him. beautiful, very interesting interview. And then Clive James mentioned that he translated the Divine Comedy, the Dante, you know, the comedy, he translated into English. And he mentioned that the opening, you know, the opening of the hell, you know, the paradise, purgatory and hell. He mentioned that the first verse, you know, Dante wrote, but the last line in this verse, he said, I couldn't find the words, and I put my own, you know, thought, say Clive James. And it's very shocking, you know, it's quite, you know, the verse, you know, goes, from now on, every day it will feel like your last day forever. This is when the person enter the hell. That's what Dante wrote, yeah? When the person enter the hell realms, he says, from now on, every day it will feel like your last day forever. You know? let this be your greatest fear. Then goes on, say, your future. So your future will be, for now on, your future will be to regret about your past. Your future will be to regret about your past. That's Dharma, isn't it? But then the last line, which I find very, you know, striking, you say, forget all your hopes. They were what brought you here. You know? Forget, you know, this is the, you know, when the person entered into the hell realm that reads that, you know? Then at the end he says, forget all your hopes. They were what brought you here. Incredible. Therefore, he's talking about the hopes, exactly the Dharma hopes. What types of hopes brought you here? What is, how can the hope bring you to the hell? You know? It's very much the hope that we find, which is the clinging. That's in the Dharma terms, go without the hopes. You know, the making of the story, the clinging, craving, you know, not be able to be here. Yeah? So, the building up. So craving, clinging, engaging, you know, the constantly engaging and making story that create the fear and the worry with regard to things that actually never happen, but in our mind do happen, and we create, you know, the mental, you know, the anger, the attachment, the hatred, the irritation, and so forth. You know, we create the hell in our mind because of inability to control it. Right? The inability to control our mind, we create the hell in our mind. It may become, you know, we may begin with a nice thought, okay, we go nice, and then slowly, it becomes nasty, we can become afraid, and maybe the restaurant, maybe the hotel doesn't have hot water, you know, maybe the food is not so good, you know, you book the ticket, everything in the mind, you know. maybe the political, social unrest, you know, so, or the family, whatever, you know, we create the story. We see in the retreat that we know we create the story. Sometimes this creates these stories, you know, it could go on and not become uncontrolled, and then become afraid, worried, you know, so we create the hell. It's very much that forget about your hopes, that, you know, they were what brought you here. That's what the Buddha called. Therefore, like in the Mahamudra Dzogchen, you know, he say, leave the mind like an empty house. You know, leave the mind as an empty house, like an empty house. So when the house is empty, you can go, you know, there's no worry, no fear. You know, you can go out, there's nothing to steal. So leave in the mind as an empty house. Yeah, leaving the mind as an empty house, you say, the mind that is free from hopes and fears. It's mentioned a lot in the insight practice, you know, in the practice of insight, you know, Mahamudra, Dzogchen. The mind that is free from hope and fears. Yes, the hope is that which creates the fear, this clinging, you know, this uncontrolled mind that creates all these uncontrolled story, fantasy and so forth, so that create the hell. So that was that was quite striking, that stanza, that verse. Yeah. physically, mentally, so there is a creating the force, be equanimous, equanimity. So in order to be able to see impermanence, how everything is conditioned, whatever inside depends, whatever tradition, yeah? Whether it is classic Vipassana, or whether it is Mahamudra, Dzogchen, or any practice that's dealing with insight, indeed, the first way to build up, you know, it is an equanimous mind. So we cannot look, we cannot investigate the mind or the truth with a worried mind, attached mind, an angry mind, confused mind, doubtful mind, and so forth. There must be, first is equanimity. Therefore, things do happen. See, it's the equanimity, it doesn't mean that, therefore, no more fear, no more worry, no more equanimity, no more attachment. Or rather, no more pleasure, no more pain. Doesn't mean that, you know? Otherwise, it's no equanimity. Yes, and no there is no pleasure. So there is no pleasure, there is no pain. But this is not a state of equanimity. The equanimity is what we create by no clinging, no having aversion. So the mind remains equanimous. Yeah. Equanimity, you know, is not something that arises spontaneously. It's not a mental factor of equanimity. You know, it's the mind that we create. So we create this equanimity by neither clinging to what is pleasant, no aversion to what is unpleasant. So now we are strongly addicted. Both, they are actually clinging. Yeah? Whether it is aversion to what is unpleasant, or whether it is clinging to pleasure, they are both clinging. Exactly. So craving, sorry, aversion is clinging, because aversion is to be obsessed with the object, you know, go away, that's clinging. Yeah, that's clinging. Being with the clinging means being with the object, be obsessed with the object. Whether it is the object that we like or that we dislike, it's still the same. Clinging, you know, be obsessed with the object. So they are equally the same. Whether we call it whether it is pleasant or unpleasant, the mind clings. It's not that the mind clings only to pleasurable things. The mind clings equally to what is unpleasant. And that we call it aversion, but it is clinging. Yeah. So, and this is, we are addicted naturally, you know, whatever, you know, we just trying to constantly to a constant battle, you know, aversion and clinging. So, living as it is, you know, the pleasure, you leave it as it is, you know, the unpleasantness, the pain, leave it as it is. We know how difficult it is. So, in the process of trying not to cling, we see how much we cling. Yeah. But normally we don't see this. We only see that how much we cling, and we become depressed and discouraged because we see how much we cling. And therefore we become discouraged because we see how difficult it is. So we see that it's really hard, and become discouraged. Yeah, become discouraged. When we hear, don't engage, and we try, you know. Not even finish to say the word, not engage, the mind is already engaging. Yeah. And therefore with this, you know, you see, this, you become discouraged, gosh, you know. It doesn't take much, you know, not even 1 second. You know, of freedom from no engaging. But we forget what I mentioned yesterday. We are not trying not to distract. We are not trying not to be distracted. We are trying to be mindful of distraction. I will remind again. So therefore, whenever I hear people, even I repeat many times, we hear, still the mind, I'm so distracted. And then what? You know, that's not the point. Are you mindful? The fact that you are telling me that you are very distracted means you are mindful. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to tell me. Yeah? Mindfulness means the memory of something. Yeah? So if you can say, I'm constantly distracted, it means we are constantly aware of that. That's why you can say, I'm always distracted. Yeah, good. Yeah, so, you know, normally you're simply distracted. You know? Yeah, in the retreat, we know that we are distracted. That's a big step that we don't recognize. You know, because our aim is, you know, breakthrough, freedom, you know, whatever, in one day. Yeah? So, so we are mindful of distraction, and therefore we should recognize that it's good. It's a success, if you like. It's good, but we don't like it. Yeah? But it's good. Pain, we are mindful of being in pain. And same. You see, the moment we realize how much we do engage, that is being mindful. So we see the problem clearly. Yeah. So we are seeing the addiction clearly. Yeah. So this again, is a result of being mindful. So then it takes time. So first we see how strongly we cling. Yeah. And then we make an effort to cling less. And that is, it takes long time. So as the Buddha is saying, no? Even a bucket of water, it feels itself. It can feel itself by the dropping of, by the falling of drops. You know, same, Buddha say, the wise person can fill himself or herself up with goodness bit by bit, drop by drop. Yeah. Also in the process of generating inside, it's like, you know, when we dig to extract a piece of, you know, a small amount of gold, we have to dig tons of dirt. Yeah. Okay, we, you know, we, there are, the dirt is useless, we throw it away, but without digging all this dirt and stones and so, we could not get this little amount of gold. It is thanks to all the dirt, yeah, the earth, the sand, whatever, that we get this small amount of gold. So therefore, it thanks to the struggle insatiation. Whatever small inside we achieve is thanks to all the what we label, you know, bad sensation, unpleasant sensation. Without this bad, unpleasant, you know, unfruitful, that humiliating sensation, there's no way, you know, one can generate inside. Therefore, all this is all part of the process. It's all part of the process. Yeah. Labeling, we say, you label, you know. Then when you become habituated, mindful, you don't need to, you know. This is just to help. So to help to disengage, to help to break the story, to help to break the stream. Yeah, the stream, you see. And you see, the more you do it, and then mindfulness creeps in. Yeah, either because I say it before the session, either because it's you that repeat it to yourself. This is how mindfulness works. Yeah, the more you do it, the more mindfulness, then as if it has its own life. Yeah, it has its own life because it's not I am mindful. Mindfulness is mindful. Yeah, that's what we learn in the practice of Vipassana. Every mental state, every dharma, have its own function. Feeling, that which feels, attentiveness or mindfulness, that which is attentive, is not me attentive, it's mindfulness that is attentive. Feeling feels, intention intend, so forth. Yeah. So therefore, it's not me that mindful, it's mindfulness. The more one is reminded, the more this mental factor, you know, comes, it manifests. You know, the more we do, the often it's a habit, right? It becomes a habit. And therefore, each time you remind it. So the beginning comes, you know, at the beginning is like only after 20 minutes you realize they are distracted. But then it's after 10 minutes, after 5 minutes. And this labeling, you know, it reminds you. So you are reminded by mindfulness to label, in this case, labeling, you know. So this time, and you may say, you may find this boring, but you are not emotional. So you may find tiring, you know, if you constantly label whatever arises, thinking, worry, fear, doubt, happy, unhappy, anything. See, the mind is constantly attentive. This is called moment by moment concentration. Yeah? It's moment-by-moment concentration, which is the type of concentration that we use in Vipassana. Yeah, we don't use the samadhi. With samadhi, there is no awareness. Samadhi is there is only absorption in samadhi. Someone would wake you up. Hello? You know? Samadhi is just samadhi. So to practice inside, things must happen. Yeah? So the mind must manifest. What is the mind? The mind is exactly what we experience in everyday life. You know? I prostrate to the ordinary mind. You know, we find this like in the Mahamudra teaching, we find I prostrate to the ordinary mind. Because when we try to understand the mind, we want to understand the mind, the nature of the mind, what is that we look? What is the mind that we look? The very mind that we experience every day, that's the mind. You know, it's not a particular mind that we isolate to meditate. So there is no mind apart from this. That is the mind. It's not like a container, mind, and then inside all the little fish, the anger, the attachment, the this and that. You know, the very fish is the mind. The very thing is the mind. The very thought, concept, emotion, this and that, pleasant, unpleasant, virtue and non-virtue, that is the mind. Therefore, anything that manifests, that is. So that is the mind. So breaking, so the moment by moment, say moment by moment, concentration, they say, is, you know, you are not relaxed. Yeah, you may not, you know, if you are all the time, you are not relaxed. But you see, you are not much distracted, you know. There is very little distraction. And because you are not distracted, okay, you may be tired. You may find tiring, but you see, you know, there is very little emotion, you know. Anger, attachment, irritation, you know. Once you do it again and again and again, you finish the session, you may feel exhausted, yeah, but not, even not experience, you know, emotion, no fear, no worries, yeah, because the mind has not created any story. The mind has not created any story because you're constantly breaking the story. You're breaking, everything is just impersonal. Everything is just impersonal, like slowing down a video where you just see, you know, movies, you know, frames, you know. So when you slow down the video, the story stops. Yeah, everything becomes impersonal, neither exciting nor fear. Yeah, so you neither enjoy nor you become afraid, whatever the nature of the movie. Yeah, so it's an impersonal thing. Yeah, so we know that to have to experience, you know, see, to experience the movie and therefore enjoy the movie, we need a certain speed, you know, you need a certain speed and other condition, but particularly a certain speed. So same the mind. The mind it needs to keep a certain speed to create a story. And to also work. The point is, it's not that this is when you do this type of practice, you have this not engaging, no attachment, no this attitude. But in everyday life, it's different. We need to engage. Where are you going? I'm going, you know, it's not like everything impersonal. Everything impersonal in the retreat, you know, you observe and you try to make everything impersonal. But in everyday life, no, you have to make the story, yeah? You have to think, you have to, you know. So we have to engage. Love, compassion, and so on. This is, you know, you have to engage. Altruism, we have to engage. These are thought process. Yeah. So we do engage. We do need to think, but we learn. So we have to learn the nature of how things work. No, we learn how the conceptual mind works. So when we need to engage, we engage, and when we realize that it's too much, there is no need, we know how to, you know, step back. Yes. So there are times when we need to engage in our everyday life, but we are mindful, and again, but the person is mindful, knows I'm engaging, that is a thought. Yeah. So, you know, that is a story, I have to go, I have to do. You know, in the sutra we see mindful of talking, you know, when you talk, you are mindful and talking. The person is mindful of oneself talking and the person talking. So. So therefore, one knows when to stop. Yeah? So one knows when to stop the thinking, the engaging, and knows when to use it. Yeah. So making like that in persona. This is very much the way it's taught in the early Buddhism. All dharma, no? Everything is made. So all dharma are impersonal, yeah? Devoid of self. You know, everything is devoid of self. You know, so we realize that everything is devoid of self, not through logic, dialectic, you know, but through observing. We see that feeling feels, mindfulness is mindful, anger is angry, attachment is attached. And then you say, what is the function of the self? And then eventually say, then what is the work, what is the task? So what does the self do? So you realize that the experience, are the mind. That's what we find in the early Buddhism, that we recognize, we see that experience is the mind. Now we believe that experience is the self. Even though we have studied Buddhism and there is no self and so forth, but what feels is different. So it feels that the self, I. I am angry, I am unmindful, I am this, I am that. So we identify, we believe the self be the experiencer of everything. Be the experiencer. So here one learns to see that, to change the perception, to discover that the mind is the experiencer, not the self. The self is nothing else. The self is another creation of the mind. The self is just a thought, a creation of the mind. So it is the creation of the mind that when the mind is uncontrolled, the self is feel bad. When the mind is controlled, the self is feel good. So the self is very much the slave of the mind, right? The self, the so-called self, is the slave of the uncontrolled mind. Because of the uncontrolled mind, is the mind who tell, there is no such a thing as the self, But the mind create the self. So the mind create the self and then abuse it, So first create, the mind create the self. Having created the self, is not happy with itself and say, don't go, do this, sit there, do that. Meditate, don't meditate. Work, don't work. Have a child, don't have a child. Have a family, don't have a family. It's the mind constantly telling the self what to do, what not to do. The self, as Buddha says, is like a crow, the bird, the crow harassed by children, constantly turning stone, throwing stone to the crow. Buddha says, the self is like that. The self is constantly harassed by the uncontrolled mind. That's the situation of the self. Normally we think the self, as if it is the cause of all our problems, the selflessness, eliminate the self. So once you eliminate the self, then we are free. So the self, as if the self is the cause of all our problems. But the self is very much the victim, So the self is the victim of this uncontrolled mind. So we should become compassionate to our self. Not ourself, our self. Should we take Antonio and tell him, all right, I will do something for the mind that doesn't harass you anymore. Don't worry, sit here behind, he doesn't see you. So it is, therefore, it's the mind that is uncontrolled, it's not the self. It's not the self uncontrolled, it's the mind. So this is the very purpose of... interesting thing is when you see, we do the practice and then we see it, and yet when we see it, it feels as if nothing happening, there is the breath, just this and that, but there are many things to observe and many things to discover, Because if it is active, it is very active practice. And if we don't see it like this, it's because we have not understood yet. So it's very active. It's not passive. It's not just dwelling on the breath, for example. So the breath is just the beginning. It's, gives some orientation. It gives some... the breath, every time you feel lost, come to the breath. Every time we feel lost, we come to the breath. Same in the break, in the sitting. So the breath is that which bring to the present. Bring to the present makes the mind clear. So is the object to establish, because then When the pain is stronger, when the pain is stronger, the emotion is stronger, that does become the object of observation, not the breath. Yeah? So the breath, if what arises, if nothing arises, one stays on the breath and strengthen the presence. If the pain or whatever may be is light, one stays mostly on the breath, but not. No, you're not. You know, the sensation or whatever may be. Pain, it takes over, it becomes very strong, then one investigate, investigate. The pain is the object of observation, investigate. So, as we said, see, is it a burning type, piercing type, stabbing type, or tearing type, or what? What, there is a certain sensation, something like, it's not just pain. The pain, it is that part is clear. Because sometimes it's a burning type, a burning sensation, not just pain. Sometimes the so-called pain is like piercing, you feel like piercing, or sometimes like stabbing. Yeah. So we move from pain, the concept of pain. And then because already made a step, already become mindful, so this is already. When we identify, the moment we identify stabbing like or burning type, burning like so forth, we miss that we are mindful. Yeah? Therefore, we are not lamenting. Yeah? We are not lamenting. So we are not panicking because we cannot do that otherwise. So it means we are quite present. And then we can look more precisely, increasing pain, increasing, or that sensation is increasing, decreasing. And because we are beginning to be mindful, let's say the pain that is bothering could be in your back, but now you are present, because you are investigating, not conceptually, so being, mindful. Because you are present, you know there is one another pain in your knees. Because you are present, you know there is one here. And so therefore, because two moments of the mind at the same time cannot coexist, the moment you are aware of this, the one in the back is gone. And because you are aware of this, you also are aware, notice, this pain, and this goes, and it goes, this pain, and this goes, God moves, So, is what appears to be static, permanent, eternal, solid, when you investigate, meaning being present, mindful, observing what is taking place. So then the moment you will notice one pain, because we are present, we know that now, because the body is full of sensation. The body, sensation pervades our body. It's not that we have a sensation and the rest is numb. It's not that it is only this. It's not that the pain in your, let's say we have a pain in our knees, and the rest is without sensation. But then they can make, they can have a surgery, no problem. So they can open the head or whatever because, So sensation is all over, it constantly pervades, and the person who is really present, mindful, feels. But what feels? It's not that one feels, an amount of sensation, like 200 sensations in your body. There are not 200 sensations in your body. There's always one sensation in the body, because there is only one, is moment by moment by moment. In order for the next to arise, the previous must pass. That's the mind. Each moment of the mind, for the later, moment of the mind to arise, the former moment must cease. It's always one moment. Yeah. Therefore, it's constantly arising and passing. So the mind is this. Sensation is mind. Yeah. Thought is mind. Everything is mind. And each time, one must pass for the next to arise. The ear consciousness must cease for the eye consciousness to arise, and so forth. Yeah. Even though it may appear that we can now see and hear at the same time, but this is one of these two is not inattentive. Now you are listening and you are also looking at me, as if you are doing, be mindful of both at the same time, but one of the two is always inattentive. If you are if you pay too much attention to what I say, then you don't really see, you know, you don't really remember what I do with my face, for example, with my hands. Yeah? If you pay attention to, really attention, concentrate to my body, then if someone asks you, what did he say? Oh, I don't know. That's what happens, see? Sometimes, for example, you just, you know, if I begin to do something strange with my hand, you just concentrate on that, and just, you know, you don't listen to what I'm saying. So the mind is constantly moving, because one consciousness must cease for the next to arise. Yeah. If you really concentrate on what I say, the I consciousness become weaker and weaker, to the point, if you really concentrate, it's not active. Yeah. So what is happening, therefore, is it feels as if everything is happening at the same time, hearing, seeing, sensation, and so forth. My reality is simply happening very fast. It is happening very fast. It is arising, passing, extremely fast. That it gives this, you know, this idea as if it's happening at the same time, but it's not happening at the same time. Why I was saying this? I lost the... You remember? Impermanence? Yeah, impermanence, yes. Permanence. Pain. So the pain, you observe, you know, investigate the pain. So investigate the pain, because investigate, you notice this, and you notice this, you notice so. There are not many pain, that's what I was trying to say. There are not many pain as happening at the same time, the body is only one. Yeah? But because of our misperception, it looks as if the body is full of pain. Yeah? But when the moment we are constant, we have to spot, you know, we are mindful and say, okay, this one. So we notice particularly this. At the beginning, there is this kind of rush of, a rush of pain. Like when you sit, when you are outside, yeah? You sit outside and first you listen to the sound, yeah? Listen, you sit, which by the way is also a good, you know, if you are doing a retreat, like, you know, in the bush, in the forest. It's a nice way to keep the mind present during the break. When first we have a rush of sound, you sit, you have a rush of sound, birds, you know, birds, people, this and that. But then as you become, you know, you become mindful, you establish mindfulness, and then you see this bird, and that person, the airplane, there are many, many, and this one, and after this, you know, very distinctly. So we perceive there are many distinct, different sounds. At first, if you don't pay much attention, you're distracted, just a rush of sound, a block of sounds. But when you pay attention, they are very distinct. This. So same, when we are not mindful, or if you are panicking with the pain, it's just pain. You know, as if they're happening at the same time, you know, everywhere, pain. But then if we establish mindfulness, begin to notice one, wherever it may be, and then because we are present, we see, oh, there is another one here. In the process of doing so, you see that and this one is gone. When you notice this, this gone, moves. Or rather, as Buddha say, break, you know? So the sensation is constantly breaking up, you know, like the water bubble, as Buddha said. It's a constant breaking up. So this is the way to deal with sensation. Therefore, sensation, which is extremely important to contemplate, you know, it is pleasant, unpleasant. Unpleasant sensation, much easier than contemplate pleasant sensation. See, when we experience unpleasant sensation, there is not much room for the mind to wander. It's just here, you know? There is not much past, there is not much future, there is here happening. So it keeps the mind the present. Instead, when you experience pleasure, the mind tends to go. You know? the mind tends to move away from the present, fantasize, you know. He wants to tell the world, you know, you want to tell the world how wonderful, you know. And therefore it's difficult to control. So it's much easier, you know. So the meditator generates this change the perception from now thinking that I can't handle pain, and we think that we can handle better pleasure. When we observe, so we find out it's totally the opposite. You know, the meditator eventually finds out that pain is much easier to handle than pleasure. Yeah. So with regard to both, one needs to be equanimous, neither clinging, no aversion, because sensation, yes, his own life, it just arises and passes. Our ignorance that is the clinging that we create the pleasure. So sensation itself, pleasant sensation, doesn't cause attachment. Yeah, unpleasant sensation does not cause anger. It's our ignorance, you know, because we cling, because we don't let go, you know. But sensation arises and passes. Yeah, sensation is not the cause. The cause of our anger and attachment based on sensation is because of not, because we don't perceive sensation as it is, that which feels. Sensation is that which feels. But for us, it appears as that which is felt. Yeah. Because it is that which is felt, we react. It is, you know, it feels pain, it feels I, feel pleasure, you know. It feels pleasant, unpleasant. It's the object felt pain, sensation. But sensation is not the object felt, because sensation is that which feels. It's sensation that feels, not I. But because we perceive sensation as that which is felt by me, that's why we react with aversion or clinging, yeah? So that's what causes, you know, becoming angry or becoming attached. Because not recognize the nature of sensation is that which feels sensation, but for us is that which is felt, yeah? So we cling. So the gradual process is that as you sit continually, say the retreat, then you will see that to the pain you get used. Yeah, in the sense, it doesn't bother you. Can go, you know, if you do a longer retreat, you will see. I'm talking about simple pain. Yeah, I'm not talking about the condition, the pain that we experience in the practice here. The pain that we experience when we do a retreat is simply due to the lack of familiarity with the sitting. Yeah, most of our pain, physical pain, is simply because we are not familiar with this. You know, it's this type of pain we are dealing, it's conditioned. Yeah, it's not talking about chronic, something else. First we need to deal with that which is conditioned, that arise and pass, and we can see it clearly, and it is due to simply the lack of familiarity. By the way, as I was saying to a student before, a good way, if you find difficult sitting, the question is not that, you see Asian people, 80, 90 years of age, they sit 90 or 80 years of age in Asia, the people just sit cross-legged, right? It's not that they are great meditators, they don't ever meditate. All Tibetans, you know, they eat cross-legged, they watch TV cross-legged, they do everything cross-legged, that, you know, these people. So same, it's good. So when you watch TV, sit in the sofa cross-legged. Maybe that, you know, if you find difficult sitting, you have pain. So when you eat, take your plate and eat cross-legged. Read a book cross-legged. Watch TV cross-legged. Listen to the radio cross-legged. So because you're listening something, you are distracted, yeah? So you're reaching, but the body gets used to. So because you sit cross-legged, so you are distracted by a book or song or music, and the body gets used. This is a good way to get used to sit cross-legged, and then you will feel less pain. Yeah? But in the retreat, as we say, pain is just, no one is free from pain. Yeah? Getting used. So we can get used to pain, but getting used to pleasure is extremely difficult. So we may realize also this. Therefore, change the perception from now we think I cannot handle pain, but I can handle pleasure. You know, but when we meditate, we realize that actually the opposite. With pain, you know, with practice, we can handle it. Become patient, accept. But pleasure is almost impossible because whenever pleasure arises, we want more. Yeah, we are never content with pleasure. Whenever pleasure arises, we want more. Yeah, that is. So therefore, we are, you know, we find difficult to handle. In the sense, we can't handle pleasure. We find more difficult. It is more difficult to be content than to be patient. Yeah. It's much easier to be patient than be content. A contentment is the object, you know, and the object is pleasure. Yeah. The object of contentment is pleasure. You are not content with pain as a love. You know. With pain, we are patient. With pain, with pleasure, controlling pleasure, what does it mean to be content? No, when we are content, then this is controlling pleasure. When we are patient, that is controlling pain. Yeah. So, when we are patient, that is controlling pain. When we are content, we are controlling pleasure. And this is as we this is how we control the pleasure, contentment. But we can see. To control the pleasure, so if you look then, to control the pain or control the pleasure, what is more difficult or more easier? By far, pleasure is more, you know, almost impossible. You know? It's extremely difficult because the moment, every time we experience time, the moment pleasure arises immediately, craving for more. Immediately we crave for more. You know, or no want to be separated, you know. We cling very, you know, strongly, and we desire more. Desire, what is? The wish to extend. Desire is the wish to re-experience what we just, you know, experience. So, because pleasure begins already with the mind. When we desire something, the initial pleasure we think and the desire, yeah. So the object that we think already give us pleasure. Yeah? And therefore we want to extend that pleasure, we want more, that desire. Yeah? So the desire to experience more of this pleasure, the wish to experience more of this pleasure, a desire. Yeah? Yeah. So the meditator, anyway, the meditator eventually will find out that pain is more easier than pleasure. Yeah. So pain is much easier, pleasure is very difficult. Therefore, the first, for example, then there are the so-called temptation, maras, you know, there are the maras. So the meditator go through the, has to be, has to fight the so-called mara, right, the maras. So the first mara, what is? Sense pleasure. Yeah? So there is sense desire and sense pleasure. Sense desire is hindrance. Yeah? They call it hindrance. Sense desire is an hindrance. Sense pleasure is mara. The sense temptation. You know? So pleasure generate, you know, craving. So for the meditator, therefore, pleasure is extremely difficult. But that's what was fighting the Buddha, you know. Buddha, when under the Bodhi tree, you know, he was fighting the maras, you know, temptation, you know, the beautiful thing, you know, the promise, you know, what, you know. How do they tempt, you know, as was tempted Jesus in the desert, you know. The devil approached Jesus in the desert of, where's the desert? I went many times to the desert. Wonderful place. What the place? No. Even in China, you know, Indy is in the... No, that was killed, the Golgot. It's the desert of... anyway. In the Judea desert, you know, it's a particular name, anyway. It was tempted by the devil, no? He give you this, they make you this, you know, the world, give you the world, you know. Tempting with pleasurable thing, you know. Powerful, pleasurable thing. Jesus said, no, you know. So Buddha same. It's pleasure, the, you know, beautiful things that are more difficult, the ugly things. It's the beautiful things that they are more tempting to us than ugly things. Yeah? So ugly or unpleasant. Ugly or unpleasant, we is difficult, bad, but you know, we can handle it. We, you know, but the beautiful and the pleasurable is very difficult. And that's what is the... The meditator, once you begin really to meditate, this is what we find more difficult to handle. Yeah. So therefore, find the right, you know, balance. One becomes equanimous with these two. So neither clinging nor aversion. Yeah. So only when we generate equanimity, then we can begin to really meditate, you know, undisturbed by these. It's like being in Sydney, more or less. If you close your eyes, you can be anywhere in the world. Not an airplane. Every city is the same. Yeah. So, so with regard to therefore the sleepiness, you remember you say sleepiness, and then thought. Yeah. So that's. We say sleepiness, thought, and pain, the three obstacles. So sleepiness, then today we saw the thought, you know, the thought that creates the story. The story that creates the so-called hope, you know, you made the example of the Dante opening line of the hell. So creating the hell in our mind, you know, be able to control this thought. And then the sensation. So the pain is by investigating the pain. So by investigating this way, one breaks up and see the so-called pain breaks up. Yeah. So also knowing, so one trying to find, trying to be, during the session, if you are really obsessed, you know, sorry, if you are really, not obsessed, but in pain, you can also think, well, okay, it's still 40 minutes. That also helps, huh? You know? It's really 40 minutes or 45 minutes, or if you do 1 hour, you know, it's not, and also by 6 o'clock, if we find this device, you know, you still, and also you do the mind training, the pain, okay, this pain, which is conditioned just because I'm sitting, you know, it's not that, therefore the importance of paying attention when you hear the bell and you see that the pain goes. Just enough for this nice, no sound, and the pain vanish. Yeah. So just enough for the mind to know that, you know, finish, and the tension goes away. So the tension from the body, the mind goes. So the body relax, pain. So here normally we feel glad when we hear this, you know, feel glad. Okay. But here, then, but this is the time to be even more mindful and see. So the pain is not in me, is not inside me, is impermanent. And with regard to Buddha, say a beautiful thing, a beautiful, when we see that things passing like pain, you know, that something passing, we see. Buddha say that what is telling you is that, let's say the so-called pain or the sleepiness that you see, suddenly you are awake and you see it passes. So what Buddha said, that what is telling you is that it's not you. The pain is not you. You are not the pain. You are not the owner of the pain. You don't possess the pain. You don't own the pain, all this. The sensation is not me. Yeah, sensation is not me. Thought is not me. So I don't own. We don't own our thought. We are not the possessor of our thought, you know. Because, you know, we see, because the change, Buddha say, if something just arises and pass, how can you perceive that as yours? Yeah? So what Buddha say is really yours, yeah? Relatively speaking, of course, you can say it's mine, it's my pain. It's correct to say my pain. But Buddha says, really? So this is a very important, you know, concept. Really. It is yours, you know? Because otherwise, if you say this pain is not mine, they will come and they take you to a mental hospital, you know? To a mental institution. You say, it's not your pain? Okay, come with us. Don't worry. Come, you know, we'll look after you, we'll take care of this. So, it's not you say it's not my pain, your pain, but what Buddha is saying is, not really, yeah? We cannot say it's really my pain, it's really my sleepiness, mine. I don't really, yeah? Own it, possess it, you know? Yeah, so therefore, it is not. You know, like this is to break. The point is, all this is to just to eliminate this, you know, this feeling of concreteness. Yeah, that's why we suffer. It's concreteness, solidity. Yeah, that's why we suffer because experience the pain. Because it's like the fear of something that arises in the dream. Because we are unable to see it as a dream, but if we are able. If we were able to be aware of the object of dream, we wouldn't suffer in the dream. That's what it's all about, being aware of what actually is. So all our suffering, we can say that we suffer because we are not aware of what actually is. And when we are aware of things, what actually is, that's when suffering stops, the fear, you know. Yes, but so the fear and the worry, because we don't know, because awareness. Yeah, knowing is awareness, yeah. It's not like conceptual knowing or the thing is aware. Only when the moment we are aware of the dream, we know. So there is no room. We cannot the fear, worries just collapse. The moment, you know, if it happened to be aware of the dream while dreaming, immediately there is no need for anything else, isn't it? Just enough to be aware for all fear to collapse. Same, enough to be aware of the real nature of thought, arising, passing, but really, experientially, not just thinking. Thinking we know. Same with pain. The more we know, the more we are aware, the less afraid, you know, one become. Yeah? So the best medicine, because the problem with pain, because it's conditioned, everyone experienced, is the fear. Yeah, that's the problem with the pain. Yeah? So the fear. It can be the fear arise or disappear. It's just as a mental, it's a perception. Yeah, it's the way we perceive. It's either fear or free from fear. Yeah. So, the fear of pain, the medicine for it is the right understanding of this of sensation. Yeah. So that's what eliminates the fear. You know, the right view. But here, the right view means that arise from being aware. Yeah, so it is through be aware, not through thinking, pain. It's like this, like that, this pain. A pain is taking place. The moment if we approach pain like this, thinking, pain is taking place, but the mind is already gone to something else. That's why the importance of sitting with it, being with it, pain. Don't move. You know, sitting with it. The moment we begin to think or lament, or even investigating by thinking, again we are not with it. We don't see, we are obstructing it. We are covering it, no, this experience. So so therefore it is a skill, you know, it takes time to learn to be able to sit with it, you know, with so-called sensation. Anyway, that was we deal with sensation, painful. If nothing, then if the investigation that is doesn't work, find difficult, then the mind training, then simply think, that, do a wise reflection. If not, so be mindful, investigation, you know, it doesn't work, also moving, yeah? Sometimes it's just enough to just adjust, and also pain can go, that too. So if you just by adjusting, so you see that is impermanent. So think of a bigger pain, you know, the mind training. So when you feel unbearable, you know, in a body full of pain, and then we think people, you know, with chronic pain, people in a much worse situation, yeah, compared to, you know. So in order to make this, in order to put our pain in a proper, you know, perspective, as it is, relative, you know. So our pain is relative, is relatively bad, you know, is relatively painful. It's not absolutely painful, it depends. The moment we put another bigger pain next to it, it becomes small. Yeah. So these two, this also can help. Yeah. Thinking of a, you know, these people, you know, constantly escaping from, you know, experiencing natural calamity, war, you know, trying to, you know, leave the country, and, you know, all these legal immigrants. You see, this illegal immigrant now in Italy, you know, 300 something died, you know, from Syria, Africa, trying to escape. Imagine their own situation. Will you exchange their situation with your, what is, you know, will you, if you have to choose between the pain here, you know, this 45 minutes pain, and the situation of like this in Syria now, for example. If they, you know, the point is, we have to choose. There's no, free from pain doesn't exist. Free from suffering in this world, no. We have to make a choice. So if you say, what do you choose, this one or that one? We make a signature for this, you know? No, the 45 minutes, yeah? God, please, you know, give me just that. Yes. Okay, so I think that's it so for today. I'm aware that it was advertised from 9 to 5. Yeah? And me, more than you, would like to be from 5, from 9 to 2. Yeah, yeah. We can do it from 9 to 12, if you like. But it's not that I'm particularly, you know, you have to be from 9 to 6. So I struggle like you struggle, we all struggle. But I thought, you know, since you, so, from 9 to 5, yeah, is a bit too short. So that's why, you know, the 2 days from 9 to 6 to have more opportunity. So it's not that you can meditate every day. You know, you don't have every day the support retreat. But if you like, we can make from 9 to 4, huh? 9 to 5. 9 to 6 is all right tomorrow, 9 to 6 again?
Yes.
Okay, good. So 9 to 6 then. Chancho Zencho Rinpoche Ma Gyepa Na Gye Gyoji Gyepa Nyamba Me Gone Gondo Pelvar Jho Gyewa Di Nyodo Da Lama Zangye Dova Chigya Malaba Di Zalam Gopar Jho. Then make your own personal dedication prayer. Thank you very much.